Start recording. Okay, so, welcome to the Too Young for This Trek podcast. I'm your host, Lokathor, and with me is Doug.
Hello!
And we're here to talk about Strange New Worlds, Season 2, Episode 5. At the top of the episode, Eric wanted me to mention something to do with Super Switch Club.
Super Switch Club.
Yeah, plug the Super Switch Club, Eric said. Everyone, go listen to the Super Switch Club. It's good. We're doing different episodes soon. I think we got a bunch of submissions on the latest episodes, so, like, you know.
Yeah, the current season is, they're calling it the speedrun season, where normally each season is, like, a game from NES, and then it moves forward to like a game from
Sega Genesis. Multiple episodes per game. Yeah, this is just one episode per game.
One episode per game, and each new episode progresses to a different console generation.
Right, and I think that currently it's Donkey Kong on the Nintendo is the game that's taking submissions, but there's like 12 people that have sent in stuff for that. So I'm sure they'll have
enough. I think Donkey Kong's closed. That was due today, the day we're recording.
Oh, Donkey Kong is closed. So next up is Kirby?
Streets of Rage 2.
Oh, Streets of Rage 2.
Yeah.
All right. So assuming that you're listening to this in a timely fashion, you can submit for Streets of Rage 2.
Why are you sitting on new episodes of Too Young for This Trek?
I mean,
have one, they're hot, baby.
When I first got put in and told about Too Young for This Trek, there was like 2 years of episodes that I listened to spread out, and so everyone was always like, oh yeah, send in your questions or like check out these other episodes, and I'm like, no, all that information is ancient. I don't care. That's why news information always goes stale. I'm never a big fan of it in podcasts.
It happens a lot for me. I mean, I'm sure with a lot of people where you find out about a podcast and then you go through the archives.
Exactly.
I'm always tempted to still respond when they say, like, hey, if you have any questions, like, just to be that person who's like, here I am from 5 years ago. I got a quibble about one of your episodes.
I did a few of those to Troy. Like, every time Troy said something wrong about Star Trek, I'm like, oh, Troy, by the way, you got this wrong. after the third or fourth time, I'm like, I should lighten up on Troy. let's see. So this episode is called Charades. It is written by Catherine Lynn and Henry Alonzo Myers, and directed by.
Oh no! Go ahead. Finish.
It's just directed by Jordan Canning. It looks like the writers have written some previous stuff, but there isn't a page for this Jordan Canning person on Memory Alpha, so maybe this is his first episode and no one's made a page for him yet.
Yeah, this says, briefly, Catherine Lynn was hired as a canon consultant on Lower Decks.
Oh, yeah.
The story editor for Season 2 of Lower Decks. Which tracks, because this is one of the fucking funniest straight-up episodes of Star Trek. The only thing I can think of that's funnier than this episode for me is the Trouble with Edward, the short trek.
Yeah, that was a very good short trek.
And that still is the funniest. That's one of the funniest things I've seen ever, let alone the funniest Star Trek.
Yeah, H. John Benjamin just always delivers solid performances, so I'm really glad that they got him in for that.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's so good. And this episode this makes so much sense. The whole time I was watching, I was like, what is it about this that's making it so funny? You know, it's surprising. Seeing that one of the writers was from Lower Decks, this tracks. This makes sense. It's got a real sharp comic sensibility.
Well, so she also, she's worked on some previous episodes of Strange New Worlds, and one of them was Spock Amok, the other episode where Spock's fiance shows up and they have to do shenanigans.
I would love it if her whole oeuvre in Strange New Worlds is just, you know,
oh, I'm sorry.
Domestic shenanigans between them.
I mislooked at which page I was on. It's Henry Alonzo Myers who worked on Spock Amok.
Okay. No, still that tracks.
It does track. I just want to, you know, make sure we're getting the right names there. With there being a writer's strike on, I feel we should go to an extra effort to make sure that writers and actors are getting the appropriate credits.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's valid.
Oh,
yeah, that guy. Oh, I see. Yeah, she's heading more for Stranger Worlds, but he's got like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 episodes credited on Stranger Worlds.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we start with the Enterprise is going at low speed through the Vulcan system, surveying a moon. This part didn't make much sense because you figured, you know, the Vulcans would have surveyed their own moons pretty darn well in the past 100 or 200 years or however much.
They didn't survey it with human eyes on a Starfleet ship.
Yeah, yeah. So they should have sent a poet, and we're the poets showing up. I get it.
Yeah, right.
So the crew is doing various catch-up activities, and for Chapel, that means that she's applying to be part of a archaeological expedition to try and get away from the ship for a little while.
It's like archaeological medicine. Is that what the program
yeah that's what
is?
They call it. And then there's a really good sequence here where she goes over the three rules of what archaeological medicine means, because I don't know that. I guess that's a real thing, maybe.
Well, my guess is that if it is something that exists in our world now, that this is probably just a make 'em up for the show, even if it does have a real world parallel, you know.
Yeah.
It felt very Star Trek-y in that sense.
Yeah, when I look up the term, the first result is the memory alpha page. So I think it's a made up term. So she gives us the rundown of what it means, but we do it with this triple cut where she's like talking
so
to
good.
Each group about what the rules are, implying that she probably went through all of the rules with each group, or that the groups are like crazy, like she gave them the first rule and then immediately left the room, changed her outfit, went to the next group and just started on rule 2 just so that we could have the shot.
That'd be great. No, I believe this is a multiple, probably a week's worth of training, nicely condensed into a very short 30-second montage.
Yeah, I love
a montage.
Done.
Oh, shout out to the director in that sense. This episode has solid writing, solid acting, solid directing. I love it when all of the pieces kind of come together like this.
Yeah, I think later on, particularly the camera kind of just lingers a little bit in a way that is very expert when you're supposed to have this awkward comedy happening. So we see Spock, and he is going to the cooking that Pike is doing. We see this is sort of set up for he's going to be also cooking later, but like Spock doesn't have he doesn't have a sense of smell that he can use because it's all suppressed on human ships. We've heard this from Enterprise. T'Pol had a thing about dogs and humans are just terrible smelling.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. It's one of my favorite little snippets of Star Trek lore that humans just smell rank to Vulcans. Very funny.
And so the... whatchamacallit? Is it herbs? It's some sort of herb or something, and he's like... Pike puts some crushed up herbs like right under Spock's nose, and Spock can't even tell what it is.
And I love his reaction. He's just like, really? Pike is just like, oh, he's so bummed out because he's so proud.
Yeah.
It's got to be like a huge pain in the nuts to just, I mean, first of all, he's got a giant cabin, which is great. He's a good captain. Yeah. He deserves a huge cabin. But then he's using so much space of it to just grow herbs that is completely lost on his friend.
Yeah. And the camera then follows Spock going around. Spock is going through briefings and stuff, and he's keeping it under control. He's using his Vulcan emotion suppressing.
Yeah.
And then T'Pring calls and says she's coming soon to have a Vashal dinner, which is some sort of engagement dinner deal, but it's very important. And he can't turn this down. He's, you know, been at Starfleet. We heard this before. He's been at Starfleet too much. He can't turn down this Vulcan ceremonial thing. And he's already in the Vulcan system. So, you know, he can't really refuse.
He can't jump out of this, right? He's engaged. There's family politics going on.
Right, right.
At this point, this is all just table setting. The show is like setting up these walls to say, this is the path that Spock's on. Don't worry about it. Like, he has to do this. Like, there's no getting out of this thing.
I like that description that it's setting up walls. It's sort of just carefully corralling where the story can go.
Yeah, that's. I think that when a show does that in a gentle, subtle way, it's really great. I still like things where they're very obviously just building walls to steer people, but it's always beautiful to see the subtle touch. I heard someone else describe it as laying pipe, which is a terrible way to say it.
I wouldn't put it that way. That would be a different verb.
But the idea is that you're setting this pipe work into your story, and a good craftsman can hide the pipes, you know.
Oh.
And a bad craftsman just has these giant sewage pipes running through the middle of the thing. And it needs to be there, but it's how well you disguise it that differentiates a good writer from a great writer.
Okay. And so Spock is going to take a shuttle, and he has to go. At first he thinks he's going to go on his own, and then it turns out Chapel is going to get sent with him. This is a minor issue for Chapel more than Spock, because they've been getting a little bit closer, perhaps accidentally closer.
Mm-hmm.
And then they find some sort of, it's a space thingy.
Space-time anomaly. I thought this was going to be a time travel shenanigans episode when they said that. I didn't know what was going to be happening. I was like, what is that going to be? Which I'm fine for. I mean, I know that, but I was a little bit worried, like, you're going back to the time well already?
Well, yeah, and we had two different time episodes. So you could imagine, they'll just keep doing time episodes. That's their thing for this show.
Right, this is the time season.
Yeah, or like on Voyager, it's always a nebula. There's always some new nebula this week, and it's got whatever in it.
It's got time shit. It's got aliens. It's got coffee. There's all kinds of nebulas.
There's definitely coffee in that nebula. and they get sucked into the space, whatever, cloud thing. And in the process, there's a whole bunch of damage, but they wake up back in sick bay, and Spock is a human. Dun dun dun.
Dun dun dun. My note says Spock crashes the ship and blows his ears off.
Oh yeah yeah yeah, that's
blows his ears off. Unfair characterization, but
yeah.
My favorite part here is when they do the reveal. They do hide it when I rewatch it, and knowing that he's got human ears, it's a kind of a funny thing where they specifically aren't showing his head,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
And then when he sits up and they tell him that he's human, it's the what the, and then they cut to like the opening credits.
It was a good cut. A lot sometimes that like a show can try and do that joke and it doesn't quite land. I think they got the timing just right on this one.
It was perfect. It was and I agree with you. That's a joke that a lot of people do, and a lot of people do it wrong. Yeah. Badly. This was a perfect implementation of it.
Space. The final frontier.
We come back from the opening music, and Una and Laan check the shuttle that probably should have been damaged in this horrible crash, but wasn't damaged at all. In fact, it's practically new.
It's clean.
It's cleaned out and everything. It's like fresh off the factory replicator.
Yeah.
And they put
mint on the pillow.
Yeah, there's a. It looks like a bottle opener, basically.
Oh, sure.
It's like a little loopy bottle opener type thing, and Uhura like looks at it and scans it, and there's some sort of subspace phone number. I don't know how the aliens have the subspace phone number system that the Federation does, but whatever.
Subspace is magic space in Star Trek. So hearing that subspace also has like phone numbers or IP addresses or like mailing routing numbers, all of that, I'm like, great, sounds good. Seems like a perfect use of subspace.
So they call the number, and Pike gets on the phone with the glowing space cloud. Classic to have just a glowing space cloud. I think it's really interesting that the Kirkovians are like sending a video signal, even like they're these non-material beings and stuff, and they're still sending a video signal of them being a glowing cloud, which is really funny.
My guess is that they artificially generate their own voice, because their voice is, I think it is explicitly meant to sound like a customer service robot, because that's kind of the vibe these aliens give, are interdimensional customer service robots.
Or at least like the way that they're considering interacting with these material creatures.
But that they specifically choose this constructed voice, and then for the look, they're like, whatever, we just look like glowy blobs.
Yeah.
It's a very funny to imagine them making that choice.
Yeah, yeah. And so the Kirkovians explained that they their transport tunnel, some sort of wormhole or something, accidentally inflicted damage on the shuttle and its occupants, and so they provided the legally required repairs, and they're like, don't call us ever again. Get out of our face.
That whole interaction cracked me up. Just the whole, like, right away, the yellow is the alien's name.
Yeah.
It says, you called me? And then they're like, oh, right. Yeah, we called you.
Yeah.
It's very curt. No further contact is necessary. Watching this, I thought, this is the opposite of you will be assimilated.
Yeah.
As a catchphrase for a species, no further contact is necessary. Goodbye.
Yeah, it's very good. and, you know, I'm not sure we've seen energy beings that have this sort of get away from us attitude as much. We see a lot of energy beings in Star Trek, but usually, like, it's Q and they're being mysterious or whatever, or they're investigating.
Or threatening. It's like, just leave us the fuck alone, or like, you'll pay kind of thing.
Yeah, sometimes they're kind of patronizing, like, oh, someday you'll learn to not use violence or whatever.
Wasn't there a whole TNG episode where it was just Picard, like, I'm gonna fucking crack the nut of these aliens who are just like, you know what, fuck you, you're humans, we have nothing to say to you. You remember that? I'm poorly describing an episode.
I'm not sure.
It's like early-ish season TNG, and
there's one where they find the energy, like the Dowd guy who's on the planet all by himself, and they have to investigate that.
These I picture, he just talks to them on the view screen, and it mostly just looks like abstract. You don't actually see like a human form alien. They've definitely never done something like this, where it is friendly, bureaucratic, passive-aggressive. Like, oh, we're all done here. We did what was required. No thanks necessary. See you later.
Yeah. Yeah, so I like this new attitude.
This is one of my favorite aliens I've seen on Star Trek in the new Trek. I love it.
And then, I mean, the ramifications of this are that Spock has, he no longer has his emotions suppressing. I guess the Vulcan emotion suppressing is like a biological ability that Vulcans have that they develop.
Oh.
So once he's not a Vulcan, he can't do it anymore.
Like, oh my God. Watching this episode, I'm like, I fucking love this episode. It's so funny. I am profoundly disturbed by the questions that it does not give two shits about investigating or answering.
Yeah. He's supposed to.
Where are emotions? Are they physical? Are they memories? Is it skill training that exists in a physical part of your brain that has now been replaced by a different part of your brain?
Yeah. So Spock had said that Vulcan emotions are stronger than human emotions, which is why they have to be suppressed. And so then he becomes fully human, so his emotions should be lessered by that.
Well,
but then they're actually they manifest more strongly because he lost his emotion control organ.
Well, the way he describes this is so interesting. At the end, Spock says Vulcan emotions are more powerful than human emotions. In the beginning here, where he first finds out he's human, he's freaked out by the feelings. He says these human feelings are different. They're intense and they never stop. So what does that mean? Because the show basically wants it to be both of the emotions are a lot and hard to control. Well, different.
Maybe Vulcan emotions are like the tide, where they come in real strong and then they go back out, and the human emotions
it's a tsunami
are just
every year. And then human emotions are just like wave after wave after wave after wave after wave.
Which kind of lines up with when we see the Ponfar and stuff.
Yeah, that's fair. Maybe you know what? I accept this.
Yeah.
Being a human gives him a different biochemistry, and now he is experiencing a different type of emotion that he has not learned to control. He hasn't learned to control an unending tide of emotion. He's learned to control occasional huge emotions.
Okay. Which brings us to... We do the same scenes that he did before, but now it's the emotional version of Spock doing these scenes.
And starting off, like, under control of, like, oh, look, Spock can be human and be chill. And then, oh, no, Spock is very not chill.
Yeah, he like, he's laughing with the group, like, in the lounge, and then he just keeps laughing too much, and he, like, can't let the joke go.
He's banging the table. He's, like, slapping Una.
Yeah, and then there's a meeting with Kirk.
Sam Kirk.
Sam Kirk. Yeah, not James Kirk, but Sam Kirk. There's a meeting with Sam Kirk.
That's Kirk.
And he was, like, eating a muffin or something, and Spock insisted that he pick up the crumbs immediately. And
pick that up when you're done. And he's like, okay, cool, I will.
Sam doesn't take it seriously enough, so Spock starts freaking out. It's an amazing
scene. I will end you.
Yes. That's...
Oh!
I'm sure that's a gift.
So, jumping back a little, I think also adds to the scene, is when he wakes up and he's human, he's like, oh, well, whatever, I guess I'll go back to work.
Yeah.
And Pike is like, okay. And then after he leaves, Pike says, I hope this isn't a mistake. Like, you think maybe it's not, yeah.
Might have been a bit of a mistake.
I will end you, Sam! Okay, guess what, Pike? It was a mistake.
And he also, like, he goes to the next cooking session with Pike, and he starts eating a bunch of foods, and... Yeah. He can taste the food much better now, which makes sense, at least in humans. If your sense of smell has been completely suppressed, then it takes your sense of taste with it. Vulcans could easily have the same thing, so they barely taste anything when they're on their nasal suppressants.
Yeah, and I think of it as that now his sense of smell and taste are, like, reasonable. They're, like, tuned to human smells and tastes, so... You know, bacon before, he either couldn't smell if he was on the suppressants, or if he didn't have the suppressants, it would be, like, so overwhelming to be disgusting.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, now I'm at the right, you know, well, I'm vibing with the bacon.
So he talks to La'an. I don't know why La'an is the person that he talks to.
Like, La'an is the counselor? Question mark? The security counselor?
She's head of security, and maybe he like gets called in after he freaks out at Kirk.
Oh, you're 100% correct. There's a scene here that you can easily imagine, which is that after he gets dragged out of the meeting, he's in the security office talking to the principal. Perfect. Yep.
Right. I think the explanation outside of the show is that La'an seems to be kind of like the favorite secondary character, like how Data was the sort of the favorite secondary character on Next Generation. La'an gets a whole bunch of time. I mean, she has a bunch of episodes, and she keeps being like one of the people who's around all the time. She gets a lot. Like,
yeah, I guess
Una doesn't get much. Una has one episode, and is not around that much.
Boy. No, this is interesting because watching this show, I kept thinking, like, oh, man, I love Discovery. I know you're not a fan. I really love Discovery. Mm-hmm. But one of the shortcomings that I strongly identify with is how they didn't hand enough narratives to the other characters. Not in a way that is... It's simple to do, and Strange New Worlds shows that it is very simple to do. You just give a lot of different people little small things to do all the time. And then over time, that starts to build up what feels like longer narratives and arc, and that I think opens up the doors for new stories. TNG did that beautifully. You know, you rewatch TNG, it takes a while for like Geordi to kind of exist more than as just a rando background person. Yeah. And Strange New Worlds is doing this perfectly. They're doing it beautifully.
Yeah. But
because of that, it makes me, I don't know if I think of La'an as a secondary character. Like, is Chapel a primary character? La'an is secondary? Una is secondary? It's a hard distinction because I can think about each of them so much and have strong feelings about and love things that they've done, even if the numbers might not add up if I looked at who's had more stories or who's had more screen time.
Yeah, I get maybe because secondary
the engineer
isn't...
was a strong secondary character for right. memoir or whatever it's been.
Secondary might not be the right term. Maybe I should just say like not like senior staff or not ranking. Like the captain and first officer naturally are usually going to be really common, and then the other people you only get so many per episode. Although, like I said, in Strange New Worlds, we don't see Una that much.
Yeah.
So she has a discussion with Spock. She tries to explain what's going on, and he, like, is, like, listing out the emotions that he's feeling, and he's like, all right, and I got these weird sexual attractions, and he kind of looks at her, and they both look away.
Eyeballs her, and she is ready to be like, I'm gonna fucking put the beat down on Spock, I think. I'm gonna have to.
Yeah. But then they both escape without anyone putting the beat down on anyone.
Yeah. And this is when it made me realize, I mean, this is fairly explicit. They're making Spock go through human puberty very quickly and very intensely. So it is, they don't say puberty, but this to me tracks more as like, he's like a teen boy at this moment trying to kind of compensate, having no experience with it.
Yeah. So the episode also goes back to Chapel, who we see trying to fix the situation. We've seen before.
She feels bad that it's happened.
She has limited genetic manipulation abilities, but you know, it's much earlier. They can't do major modifications like we might expect out of a later series show.
And they have a beautiful single throwaway line. This is what I love when people are this kind of cognizant of canonical, perhaps, gotchas that sneak in as traps in every episode.
Yeah.
Where they're like, well, we don't do genetic modification later when they're giving Spock his fake Vulcan ears to wear. But they're like, oh, we don't want to change him genetically because it could fuck up the cure and undo this permanently.
Right.
So like that right there covers like, well, why don't they do all of these other things? Well, they can't. It's got to be a permanent cure.
Yeah. So at the end of the scene, Mbenga reminds her that she's at the same time still trying to sign up for the archaeological medicine thing, and she runs off. But when she gets to the phone screen to do the interview, Durik, the Vulcan... He calls her, says about two sentences, and then is ready to hang up. He's not impressed with how, in a human context, you'd want, like, the professor would be like, oh, put this in your own words to show that you learned the material or whatever. That's not how these Vulcans do it. They want exact
copy. You have
copy.
To show us that you have memorized it, and you don't derivate from the prescribed path of thinking.
Right. It's like a medieval illuminated manuscript where you have to make exact duplicates every time.
Yes. Yeah.
And so she's like, oh, but I've like done all this field work. And he's like, oh, I'll double check your application. And hangs up.
Right.
And the other...
Classic Vulcan asshole.
Yeah, classic Vulcan asshole. Vulcans are always just mean, bad people in Star Trek.
Well, Enterprise is what I think really solidified is like, oh no, if there was a society like this, a lot of them would be just straight dickheads.
Yeah.
Enterprise established that as part of Vulcan lore, and I fucking love it. And I love that they have run with it going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. But speaking of the planet Vulcan, Spock's mom beams aboard. Mm-hmm. She's the fiance dinner thing has been moved to the ship. And so she showed up ahead of time to help make the preparations because
Amanda beams in to kick down one of the walls we set up.
She's
Fuck
kicking
you,
down one of the walls.
Anyway.
Well, so Spock's fiance T'Pring, her mother is extremely strict. And so this has to go smooth and according to tradition, or it will be very bad.
It's important, capital I.
It's important, yeah. I want to give a special shout out. I don't know their name, but whoever's in charge of the costuming for Strange New Worlds did an amazing job this episode.
So good.
With not only Spock's mom's dress, Amanda Grayson.
Right.
She has two different dresses, both excellent. Yeah. And then T'Pring and T'Pring's parents show up. All of that looks good, too. Everything is just completely gorgeous in this episode.
Hey, if we're on the fashion tip, can I do a shout-out to earlier in the episode?
Please do, please do.
During the training montage, when Chapel is citing each of these three lines and it cuts to different groups.
Oh, yeah.
The third group is them doing shots where it's like they're socializing. It's her, Ortegas, Chapel, Ortegas, Uhura, and who was the third? Oh, La'an is there. And they're all wearing like casual clothes, like civilian clothes, all super different from each other, all with a very like 50s futurism, like 50s mod style. It's so, it's beautiful. It was so good.
Yeah, and I think usually Star Trek civilian clothes are very bland historically
or chaotic.
Yeah.
Jake's clothes is not.
Yeah.
Are
well they make a joke
ludicrous.
About that in Lower Decks at one point, like a character Rutherford is wearing one of the, the outfits and he's like, I don't know, it could be more asymmetrical.
It really looks like they're just like, well, we've got all these costumes from earlier shows. Let's just chop them up and sew them together.
Yeah. So civilian fashion, not often going well in Star Trek, but we finally got very good civilian fashion here.
So good, yeah. I'm glad that you called that out because it's noteworthy in the rest of Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah. So
compared to the rest of Star Trek.
Amanda Grayson, Spock's mom. Explains this to Pike and Spock.
Spock
is trying to cover it up with a hat.
Spock is wearing a hat with a Delta with a star.
Yeah. Oh, so some people pointed this one out. The Delta is wrong on the hat. Like the insignia is drawn wrong, but actually
it's like it's hand drawn.
Well, like it's the wrong shape. It's like lopsided. It's not how the Delta is supposed to look. Compared to normal.
You just replicated it very hastily.
Well, so it's a reference to a different episode of original series where like the costume budget was short that month or whatever. And so one of them has a lopsided insignia on their shirt and it's the same lopsided insignia.
That's a great visual callback. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Also, I would pay a lot of money for one of those hats. Like if
oh my god,
Paramount Plus had a merch shop.
Give us the merch shop.
This hat should be in it, because I don't know if I'd ever wear the hat, but goddamn would I buy that hat.
I could definitely imagine having a winter hat that has the lopsided insignia on it.
And that interaction where Amanda is like, why are you wearing that silly hat? And Spock is like, it's not silly, it's regulation, Mom. and then Pike, I have one just like it.
Yeah, yeah, so Pike's trying to do his best.
Plays his whole role this episode is just this beautiful straight man just making funny little asides, little like if there could be winking to the camera in Star Trek, like you know, like The Office style.
Well,
that's what he would be doing this time.
And so I mean I made that point in the earlier episode Ad Astra Per Aspera that like what Pike did instead of trying to take over the show as the captain is just provide the support where necessary and but like be supporting to the other characters because it's their story.
It's beautiful. I think it's a perfect use of his character. And when they need to do some like development of him, they've got a couple of different, you know, they got a lot of dogs in the fire they can use for Pike if they ever want to start moving forward on any of his, you know, main quests.
But after a moment It only takes a moment, and Amanda knows what's up. She demands Spock take off the hat, and then the jig is up, and that's when he explains that he's human, and she says, well, we have to do this anyway.
Right, Spock, we should stop. Amanda, no.
We're not stopping the plan.
Yeah. Which is funny, and I just want to point this out. The human person has the logical answer. Pull the fucking plug on this.
Right. Right. And she's, you know, she's gotten used to, or maybe she always was, being a very logical and, you know, calm person.
She's in deep on Vulcan bullshit. Like, she is in deep. She's bought it whole hog.
I mean, I guess you wouldn't marry a Vulcan if you hadn't bought into it.
Yeah, I mean, she must love it, so more power to her. I love Amanda as a character.
Yeah, yeah. I really like this particular Amanda, because we've seen a bunch of different Amandas. I really like how we're doing it this time.
He plays it great.
So, let's see. Amanda begins going over the requirements of the dinner.
Yeah.
The hardest requirement is that the Vulcan tea ceremony involves a Vulcan ceremonial kettle, I guess you'd call it, which has no handle. See what?
Like the TV show Kung Fu, where David Carradine has to burn the symbols into his arm by holding a giant, giant cauldron that is like filled with boiling whatever has been cooking over a thing.
Yeah.
So it's like a huge ass cauldron that he puts his arms around. And it's like,
oh, I've never seen that particular bit, but anyway, sure.
On your own, Google Kung Fu Burning Cauldron. I don't know what it would be.
Yeah, David Carradine Burning Cauldron.
He has to do that, but with his hands, like a pickable teapot.
Yeah. She is able to do it because she's had the training to, like, ignore her pain receptors, I guess, even though she's not a Vulcan. Humans can learn to do this.
Can I read this quote?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's beautiful. Amanda, after she picks up, Spock touches the pot, and he's like, it's too hot, this is dumb. Amanda picks up this burning thing, brings it over, pours tea, and puts it down without, like, flinching, making a sound, making a face. And she says, one thing I've learned about being a human on Vulcan is how to suppress my own pain. And I like that that's semi-ambiguous, or at least can have layered meanings.
Yeah.
It's not just picking up this pot, but it's also like, it fucking sucks to be on a planet where it seems like most people hate you.
Oh yeah, the Vulcans are one of the most racist groups that we see in Star Trek.
Yes.
They dislike everyone that isn't them.
Yeah, they're super, yeah.
And so she is also supposed to pretend she's being mind-melded with. Spock tries to, like, for the crew as part of the practice, Spock tries to pretend to do a mind-meld, and he kind of has a freak-out that it's not working.
He can't.
Gets a little worked up. Everyone has to go on a 5-minute break.
My mind to your mind. Hey, Spock, a little less stiff. I'm trying!
Yeah. At this juncture, we also have Chapel has exhausted all possible Federation medical techniques, including, like, all the weird stuff Mbenga has sort of in the back room, so to speak. All the extra strange things.
Get some off the books project.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he describes, like, she says that we can't do X, Y, and Z, and he's like, "Well, did you try any of the secret other things that we do?"
Right.
And she's like, no.
"I love that about Mbenga."
Yeah, it's very good, and it lines up with, you know, he's got maybe not everyone has the super drugs. Maybe only a select few are in on the super drugs program.
Mbenga kept his daughter in the transporter. That dude solves problems in very out-of-the-box ways.
He's not an official person. He's a very unofficial person.
He's a fucking wild-card doctor. Just
it's good.
Results-oriented. I'll give him that. That is...
Yeah, no, he gets it done.
The methods don't matter.
So Chapel realizes that the only, like, he phrases it that, like, we've exhausted all of our options, and she's like, oh, all of our options. I get what you're saying. And she immediately jakes a shuttle and runs off to fly. Well, no, she gets, who does she get? She gets some people to go with her. It's Uhura. No,
Ortega and Uhura.
Yeah, Uhura and Ortega, she gets them.
This is another quote that I really love from this episode. Apple lays this out to Ortega's, who says, you want me to fly to another dimension so you can talk with some ancient aliens? And Apple says, no, I want you to fly us adjacent to another dimension so we can send a signal to some aliens.
Right.
I love that line. It's just, I love the hair splitting of like, no, it's not as bad as it sounds.
Right, it's much more different.
Ortega's to fly and Uhura to do the communication.
Okay, that's why she needs two people. All right, that makes sense.
Yeah. Because again, she doesn't really, but this is what Strange New Worlds is great about, is it's like, hey, let's have some people be involved in this fucking shenanigans, you know?
Yeah.
And they give everybody different pieces to do.
I could imagine if this were a Voyager episode and B'Elanna had been the person not injured in a shuttle thingy, then you'd see B'Elanna going out on her own in a replacement shuttle and like scanning the whatever, and she'd do it on her own.
Yep.
So we've been going pretty steadily between these two plots, so that's enough time we get for Chapel. We got to go to Spock again.
Meet the family. I have to meet the Fockers, the Vulcan Fockers.
Yeah, so T'Pring is the fiance. T'Pril is the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember what the father's name is. He's kind of a... To what?
Savet. Savet. That's how the subtitles have it. Savet.
Right, Savet. So,
and he's a sweetie. He's so nice, but he's such a pushover.
Right. So T'Pring, pretty reasonable as Vulcans go. Savet, very kind and understanding. Even by human standards, T'Pril is just a complete stick in the mud.
She is terrible. She
wants everything exactly traditional.
There are choice words I would use to describe T'Pril that I would hesitate to use casually.
Right.
I have a note here that says that T'Pring's parents and T'Pring herself shows the variety of Vulcans, which I love.
Yes.
I think older Star Trek had a habit of like one noting Vulcans as just these like distant logical things. And I think that in general, even in the fandom, I feel like a common mistake is that like Vulcan logic is just also bullshit. Vulcans have opinions that they treat as objective facts, but they're wrong. They're just lying to themselves and to everyone. A Vulcan can use logic to justify literally anything. That's the foundation of their culture. And so I love it when they show different types of Vulcans who all ostensibly are driven by pure logic, doing wildly different things and getting to different conclusions.
Right. And I'm glad that you said it, because I've said these complaints before, and I don't want to sound like too much of a broken record. So I'm glad you're here to give the same story.
Right. Yeah. Whenever a debate about Vulcans comes up and people are going back and forth, my get out of the argument is like, well, you know what? Actually, they're Vulcanians, so we're done here.
Yeah. Yeah. So we
I'm sorry, you don't take the cage as canon? Well, then fuck you.
Vulcanians. Yeah, he does say that, doesn't he?
That's what they're called. I mean, it's Star Trek. I said this before on this very podcast. Star Trek canon is vibes, and the more you try to force it to not be vibes, the more frustrating your job becomes.
Right. Because, you know, there's dozens of actors over dozens of years. It's not going to be just one thing, like a single author book series or something.
Yep.
So we are going to have the dinner back in Pike's lovely large kitchen quarters lounge.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's not that large. It's adequate. It's not that lovely.
Right.
Right. I didn't notice that at first, dear. Sorry.
Exactly. Exactly. And okay. Pike has some lovely either Vulcan food or near Vulcan food, if he didn't get the ingredients right, something like that.
He tried to make a Vulcan dish.
Yeah. Civet, he loves it more than I've ever seen a Vulcan love it. A piece of food. It's
he was
very
like, this
good.
This is great. This is, yeah, he's ready to have a whole handful of those things.
He wants to eat them up. And then T'Pril says, no, there's salt, and that's not traditional, so...
Also, she has not tried one.
Yeah.
He ate one, fucking loves it. She just smells the salt and looks at it and is like, oh, it's also too elaborately twisted and smells too much like salt. You don't like those.
Yeah, it's...
You're right, dear. I don't like them.
Hmm. So, the meeting proceeds. And they have to... There's a bunch of different rituals. Spock mostly passes through them. I think one of the... He gets through the tea pouring.
Tea, right. And that's like you're just brewing the tea from their family's tea recipe, and you have to do it right, or otherwise they'll be mad at you.
Right. You have to pour the water sufficiently slowly so that the buds can steep as the water passes or something.
Right, they're just being, like, next-level tea snobs.
Yeah, they're being real tea snobs. And
then it's the ritual of awareness, which is fucking wild.
Awareness, that's what it's called. It's...
That's where you...
It's
you're
not
getting married.
Good. Yeah.
And your future parents-in-law, they have X number of minutes to tell you everything that's wrong with you and how you can improve.
Oh my gosh, this is...
It's just... Absolutely... It is... Again, Vulcan society is fucking bonkers. Like... This is, oh yeah, there's logic behind this. It's just being needlessly cruel to people. That's the logic.
Yeah,
you fucking weirdos.
It's a reflection of Vulcan attitudes, and also it is an explanation for how the Vulcan attitudes keep continuing into the future. There's this weird abuse cycle that the Vulcans have just perpetuated upon themselves.
And Amanda navigates it like a fucking champ.
Again, yes.
When it's her turn to talk to Pring, she's like, you don't call me enough. You don't visit enough, which is such an innocuous criticism of a daughter-in-law. Like, it is also, it's like, yeah, I wish I could see you more. That's your flaw.
Yeah.
And T'Pril is like, oh, honey, no. You're going to fucking stick the knife in there or we're done here.
But
and then Amanda is like, okay, well, I guess to Pring, you could have more self-esteem, which again, positive. That's a positive criticism. And the husband is like, I say the same thing, and I fucking loved it. Because T'Pril is also like, that's still not cruel enough. But that the father is like, yeah, she should be more confident.
Yeah. I mean, for being supposedly emotionless, T'Pril really wants to inflict the harshest criticism she can.
Yeah, she's filled with hate. This woman is filled with hate.
Yeah, she just won't admit it. And then we bounce back to the shuttle, and... The signal isn't working well.
More Krakowians.
The signal is, in fact, working so poorly that they decide to, if it worked to crash into the thing the first time, they'll just crash into it a second time.
Fucking A, I love Star Trek logic. Like.
And they're like, oh, are you sure? No. Okay.
So, okay, the thing that turns Spock into a human? Let's drive into it, baby.
So they fly inside, and someone who isn't yellow, picks them up. Blue, yeah. Blue, handles the case at first, and they're like, oh, we were expecting yellow. Can you go get yellow?
Can I talk to your supervisor?
Yeah. Can we talk to the manager? and this is where it gets, really weird, because, what yellow wants to hear... is Spock is particularly important to me, therefore you must fix it. Like, they don't specifically say that they fixed
do this
Spock
for anyone.
Wrong. Right.
Yeah.
The first chapter won't explain that Spock wasn't fixed properly. She won't just say that clearly. And right. then she won't even just for the sake of argument say that Spock is extra special to her. She gets
Hey, we can fix this guy if you like you tell us that you want to doink him real bad.
You know,
she's like, you know what? He's just a friend. Ortega's and her are like, girl, you want to fuck that guy. Just tell him you want to fuck that guy and they'll fix him.
Well, it's very complicated. It's kind of like high schooler-ish or like emotionally immature, not being honest with yourself type of deal.
Totally.
And
totally.
I think it fits Chapel really well because she's got this harsh divide between like her professional work stuff is very well kept, very well organized. And then as soon as she steps out of the job, she goes back to just being kind of a party animal that might not, you know, be honest with herself all the time.
Well, and there's other complications. Like, she was engaged to someone in the first season,
yeah. I think,
right? And then, obviously, Spock has been engaged to someone this whole time. So it's not like she's just going to be like, all right, I'm going to tell this guy that I really like him.
Yeah.
But she's kind of denying it to herself as, I think, as a self-protection. She doesn't want to be honest about her feelings because they can't be followed through in her mind.
There's an element of self-defense to it. I think, particularly when it's like, when it's obviously what the alien is waiting to hear to wave a magic wand, just say it. Just say what needs to happen to get through the bureaucracy.
So and there's literally no reason, really, for that to be that way. There's no reason for it not to. So I just love how blatant that is, that the alien is just setting up this scenario for us to watch Chapel go through it. It's so great.
Yeah. And as long as that takes, eventually Chapel admits that like she has these special feelings for Spock, therefore he qualifies for the extended warranty on his DNA replacement.
Okay, we can give you an extension because you do have feelings. I like that she makes her Ortega's turn around.
Yeah.
Even though they're going to be able to hear what she says, she still doesn't want anyone looking at her while she's confessing her gooey feelings for Spock.
Yeah. And eventually she gets the injection, the hypospray of how to fix him or whatever.
His vitamins, yeah.
Yeah, he's got space fixing vitamins. So they take it back to the ship, and the engagement party is about to be over. No, it's the last stage.
Point, yeah. They're at the mind meld.
Yeah, they're at the mind meld.
We have
stage.
Shown Spock can't fake a mind meld. He can't trick anyone. He can't even trick like humans who have no experience with this. He's so bad at this part of pretending. So then he's looking for a delaying tactic.
Yes.
And then
Pike introduces an ancient holy ritual.
We should do a human ritual. And then he's looking at Amanda. He's trying to bring Amanda in on it, like, no, we must do the ancient human ritual of, and she's like, she does like a yes, no. She doesn't yes and no. She's like, yeah, and it's called what? And he says, charades?
Yep, they gotta do the ancient.
And the face he makes, it's in mouth, he makes a face after he says charades that is so beautiful, because it's just immediately regretting the words that you just said.
Yep. I immediately regret this decision.
He just winces at, like, I fucking said charades out loud. Oh my god.
So as he's committed now to explaining how to play charades, Chapel gets in, gives Spock his vitamin injection for his injuries, and she quietly explains that like it's gonna bring his Vulcan powers back instantly, but it won't bring his ears back instantly. So he's temporarily a Vulcan with human ears.
Yeah. Absolute nonsense, but it's perfect because it sets up everything that happens next, which is beautiful.
Right.
And I love it. They just need a line that's like, yeah, sorry, you're going to act like a Vulcan now, but ears won't come back. Here we go.
Yeah, and I honestly, there was that thing in the first episode of the show where his ears had been transformed, and then like as it was wearing off, he like shouted so hard that his ears went back to normal. So if they had his ears go back to normal, it would have been fine.
Sure.
Then we wouldn't have gotten the next scene. So just, you know.
Right. And that's what I mean. Like, it's necessary for the impact of the next scene, And so they just explain it away. It's a hand wave line that doesn't need to make sense or get into any more detail. It works for the scene that happens. If you did it for no reason, it would be weird. Like, well, why did you say that?
Yeah.
So giving it a payoff, to me, makes it all fine.
So, so Spock goes out. The charades, it's between rounds of charades. And he says, okay, I can do the mind melt now. He does the mind melt. He describes the memory. T'Pril, even now, is willing to try and talk down on a mind melted memory.
Right. What a basic ass memory. Oh my God. That's what you showed your son?
Oh my God.
You're such a lame human.
It's, yeah. It's not good.
And then, T'Pril.
Yeah.
And so
T'Pril says, you know, it doesn't matter if you like it or not. That was like, we've concluded the ritual.
Right. It's,
she almost says, shut up.
it's a great burn. She says it would be illogical to question the nature of someone else's memory. And her fucking mom agrees with her. Not verbally, facial expression. Her mom is so hurt and chastised at that moment. She's like, fuck, my daughter's got me here. I am being illogical because I'm being a raging monster right now. And I have no comeback at this point in time.
So,
I love it.
And I'm really glad that even just at the end of the scene that T'Pril was able to like step in and sort of pull back her mother and was able to get even just a small win because she had been suffering almost as much as Spock the whole time.
Well, she's been suffering for literally her entire life with this.
Oh, yes. I'm sure her whole life is like this, and it's terrible. Yeah. I feel bad for T'Pril.
They give little hints of that earlier in the episode where she just mentions just the trying nature of T'Pril as a mom.
Yeah. Yeah. And then T'Pril goes on a bonus rant about how hard it must be for Spock to be partly human because it would disable and destroy his abilities to participate in these Vulcan rituals, which are just so powerful that a human couldn't possibly do them.
It must have been hard being half human to do this. I can't imagine because humans suck. So like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's not a good look for any Vulcan. No. All Vulcans are diminished by T'Pril's poor actions here. Throughout time.
Everyone in the room that's not T'Pril is going, ugh.
Yeah.
Yikes.
At which Spock has had enough. His emotions are suppressed, but even though his emotions are suppressed again, he still manages to pull the rug out from T'Pril by very calmly saying, but I was a human the whole time. Dun, dun, dun.
Yep. Dun, dun, dun. Yep.
He takes off the little fake ears.
The reason the vitamins work that way.
Yeah. He takes off the fake ears to reveal that he was human in a very dramatic way.
Mm-hmm.
And T'Pril is just shocked.
And then also, I want to shout out another small moment of comedy in this moment we're talking about here. When Spock is doing his big reveal and they're like angering back and forth at each other, Pike circles in carrying the snacks and then sees what's going on and like immediately turns around.
Yeah, Pike gets back out, and then the dad, Suval, to sort of
Savette.
Yeah, after like when everything's all dead quiet, Savette's just like, "Well, I'm gonna get more snacks." And he
I want more Krispies, please.
Yeah, and him and Pike just hang out at the snack table. It's very good. I could watch an entire episode of those two.
Yeah, as much as I don't like T'Pril as a real person, you know what I mean? Like, not
right.
That T'Pril's a real person. But the actor, I think, is so fantastic at conveying
she's amazing
that.
At conveying it. Yes, yes,
the
yes.
Character, I really like the character. I really like Savette and T'Pril dynamic. It's fun. I really do hope that they become kind of a recurring part of Star Trek in some way. I would love to see more of that.
Well, and it reminds me of Majel Barrett doing Waxana Troy, because Waxana Troy is supposed to be very difficult to be around, and Barrett just she gets it perfect every time. She's always on the money.
Agreed.
So, you know, sometimes you just have characters that you love to hate, as they say.
Yeah. Agreed. And I Devette makes me so happy. I feel bad for him that he kind of, you know, is a bit of a pushover to his overbearing wife. But he seems like a light and joyful Vulcan, and that is a nice characteristic to see on Vulcan.
It is. So the only other time we've seen anything close to... he's practically hedonistic by Vulcan standards. And the only time we've seen anything close to this is there was an episode of Enterprise where T'Pol meets some like weird cult of Vulcans that don't suppress their emotions. And they're it's fine. We do mind melds all day and we have emotions. But then it's got
I don't think it's
handled well by that episode, because then there's like a mind meld disease. Meld disease, and it's supposed to be like, oh yes, these are those other people over here with their diseases. Right. They're separate. Yeah. And I'm like, no, that's not. No. We want normal hedonistic Vulcans. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very, you know, sexual assault-y, the way that he does the force. It's
very bad. Very bad.
These Vulcans who are like rejecting logic, explicitly rejecting logic, are like, yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Creepy goblin people is gross.
Yeah. So I like Saval being a positive role model of just enjoying food, just liking an atmosphere.
Doesn't mind that a human cooked it. Doesn't mind that it's salty with a fancy twist. It tastes good.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like a more chill Cybok, where Cybok is a little too extra. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Cybok is a little bit. He's not like a lecherous maniac rejecting logic. He's just a jovial overachiever.
Yeah.
Who wants to talk to God?
So after that, we cut to. We don't see the exact after effects of Spock making this reveal. We cut away, and then it's T'Pring who's confused about why Spock wasn't more honest earlier. And we didn't mention that part, but he was almost ready to talk to her when she first beamed aboard.
He told Pike he was going to. He told everyone, I'll tell T'Pring. That'll make this easier.
And then he just didn't quite... He tries to say that, you know, he didn't think it would be... he thought it would be a burden to her, and she's like, well, you burdened everyone else around you.
Right, and that Vulcans aren't good at lying.
Yeah, which is a lie.
He was worried about that. Yeah, which is a lie. the greatest trick the Vulcan devils ever pulled was convincing the world that they don't lie.
Yeah, yeah. So she's like, well, your actions were logical, but we're on a break now.
Yes.
Cut to, for no reason, suddenly we have to go back to chapel again. Chapel.
Well, there's a reason, baby.
Yeah, is speaking to Durek again, the interviewing professor guy. And he's like, oh, well, I reviewed your case. And she's like, she's not in. And at the end of the conversation, she's like, by the way, I met interdimensional beings today, and I did a medical procedure that you've never heard of before using ancient science medicine. He's like, tell me about that. And she's like, you'll find out when I release it to the public in general. You don't get any special treatment.
You're not part of the Patreon, baby.
Yeah. Patreon, it's 1 month exclusive.
I love that she tells them to fuck off.
Yeah.
Her line is like, I don't think your program is ready for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that,
like, you're not ready for
she had a lot of frustration this episode, and then ends with a bit of a win for her. And so I like it. I mean, it's cheap and simple storytelling, but it's very good.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's good to have her be assertive about her abilities too, and to value like what she's doing in Starfleet and on the ship. And I think also part of it is Spock. I think a read of it is the reason she was going to take this thing was to get away from Spock.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely, that was the reason. Everything else was just like she wasn't admitting the truth to herself or the people around her. But that was the reason for sure. And The
Can I go back 1 second?
Oh yeah.
Before the breakup, and this is only something I noticed more explicitly on a second watch through of this episode, when Chapel comes in to break up the charades game with Spock's vitamin cures, they go away to like get the injection, and T'Pring is like eyeballing Chapel the whole time and watching them walk away. And I think an implication there is that T'Pring is like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, he wants to fuck her. Like, there's... They do, in the previously on, they mention T'Pring saying, I could never imagine you having feelings for Chapel. A reference to an earlier episode where Spock had to pretend to have feelings for Chapel. To trick someone. And T'Pring is like, of course, you never would. And I think they gave us that on the previously on to underline this scene. Which T'Pring is like, oh no, I get it. He does have feelings.
Yeah,
and I think that's part of the motivation for the breakout that comes next.
I did not catch that particular part, so I'm glad you brought it up. But that adds a layer to when she calls for the break.
Yeah, and I think it helps me anyways. I really liked T'Pring. My first viewing, the breakup felt a little jarring, and then the second viewing, I was like, oh, this tracks now. This makes sense to me. I will nitpick, you know, tech stuff for fun, but when it's like human decision, emotional things, that like the nitpicking is valid.
Right.
That's a thing that needs to be, even if it's alien thought, I need to see that is like eternally consistent with how the character thinks.
Well, and making it internally consistent is how the authors sort of trick you into believing that these are real people, that they have an internality to them.
So they're not cheating. Like, the story doesn't cheat where anybody can do anything at any time because we want it to happen.
Yeah. That internality is key. So we go back to Spock. Spock is seeing his mother off the ship on the transporter pad. And he says, hey, what's the deal with that memory you shared? Because it really was just a plain memory of him going to school or whatever.
Right.
And she says, that was the first time that I saw you being accepted by the other Vulcan children. And Spock has this revelation that, like, his mother wasn't accepted by the other Vulcan mothers. And so even after he began to fit in, she never fit in. And she says, what's the quote? It is not easy being a human who loves a Vulcan, which immediately causes a parallel from Spock and his mom back to Chapel.
And he's I think that helps Spock understand what's going on between him and Chapel. I feel like that he didn't really get it beforehand.
Right. He definitely didn't get it. He's not... He's a science man. He's not a person's man.
And he's not aware of other people's feelings, especially human feelings.
Yeah. I mean, well, he knows they're there. He just doesn't... He can't read them. He seems to do pretty well when they've been clearly explained to him. Like, there was a scene in the previous episode where, like, Ortegas is just like, just walk away, Spock. And he knows, okay, I walk away now.
I'll just do the thing. Yeah, right.
So Spock is in his quarters. He's about to leave his quarters to go see Chapel when the doorbell rings and it's Chapel going to see him.
Yep.
And they say a bunch of stuff which is unimportant and doesn't matter, because what matters is that they start smooching.
It just goes right to my note, literally says smoochies.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they start smooching.
I agree with you. There's a lot of blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, what does this mean? And Chapel's like, it doesn't matter. Keep smooching.
He just says, shut up.
Cut the credits.
I'm gonna kiss me, you fool.
Yeah. So, that's the episode.
Oh, I'm sorry. Spock says, what does this mean? Which I think is a great...
Oh, yes.
And she says, just shut up and kiss me.
Yeah, Spock kind of wants a clear explanation, but the clear explanations are not pending.
I also think that, to some degree, Spock right now is also voicing people who I think... perhaps super deep into what does canon mean in terms of this prequel, that can, by its the bane of his existence, can rewrite old canon that people may not like that fact. So Spock saying, what does this mean? I think also has a meta read on it of like, what does this mean that me and Chapel are going to doink right now?
Yeah.
She's a character on TOS, and they show her longing for Spock and for Kirk basically saying, he's a robot, honey. He'll never love you.
I remember there's at least one, like, they have a specific scene where she specifically is like, oh, Spock, I love you so much. And he's like, well, you know I could never return your feelings. And it's like,
right.
What do you, apparently 10 years ago, you're switching a lot. What's going on? But,
again, I can't return them again.
Yeah, I mean, and it could be that he, like, did a half colon R or something, his emotions are less. Yeah,
or it doesn't matter, or they've just decided we like it more this way.
Exactly.
And that if we were going to do TOS again, it would be slightly different. I'm fine with that.
Right. Like, yeah, they don't need to keep that particular detail of continuity. It's fine. Yeah. Just have more smooching. He hasn't met Kirk yet, you know? His one true love isn't here yet. He's just smooching everyone else in the meantime. Once he really meets Kirk, then we know he'll be the one man Vulcan.
This is what I like about humans. I have been in love with Pike this whole time. I need a new Pike.
Right. Did you like the episode?
I mean, I think that's... It'd be funny if it's like, nah, this is a zero. Also, by the way, that scale is fucking bonkers, man. Like,
the 0-1 scale?
I mean, you're a delight to talk to and to hear on the podcast.
Yeah.
But in this episode, when Spock is hearing to Prill tell him everything that's wrong with them, Ethan Peck makes this beautiful series of wincing faces.
Yes.
That is me when I hear you saying, like, yeah, I judge Star Trek episodes on a 0 or 1. This episode is a 0.
It's just pass-fail. It's really just pass-fail. Sure. Putting 0 and 1 on it is a way that you can, like, average the passes and fails.
I do on my podcast, long on hiatus, the Game Pass podcast, we rate games as a game or a pass. So it's a pass-fail grade there. Yet still, I was disturbed to hear it applied to Star Trek.
Yeah,
so,
I guess.
Yeah, am I a hypocrite? Yes, I am.
Yeah, it can get a little hard to get used to. Like I said, some of the other people that I watch Trek with, they insist on, like, 0.72 for this episode. And I'm like,
sure,
you're not going with the spirit.
The thing is, you have someone like me. For me, I would just be like, mostly ones. There'd be a smattering of episodes that would get a 0.
You know, and I think that that's okay. Like, if you enjoy Trek most of the time, it's okay to say you enjoy Trek most of the time, I think.
Hell yeah, it is.
There's nothing wrong with enjoying a Star Trek. Not here.
So yeah, I give this episode a 1.
I definitely give this episode a 1.
I love lighthearted Star Trek. I love fun, silly Star Trek.
Yeah, I love a good shenanigans. I love that we're learning about the characters, and it's not... Sometimes there are shenanigans episodes, like, where they all get drunk or whatever. The characters aren't acting like themselves, and, like, what we see them doing that's silly is not supposed to be part of their regular character. But this is
how they do that thing. Right. They break the rules of what we're saying. We want internally consistent. So an easy cheat for that is space drugs make you horny or silly or someone else. You know?
Right.
That's how you easily get out of that thing, which is fine. But when it's real like this, when it's meant to be like the expression of the characters consistently, that's so much more interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So
add nuance to Vulcans. I think that's a great addition to the canon, to the lore.
I love a nuanced Vulcan. I love a nuanced anyone. When they in Deep Space Nine, there's that Klingon that owns the restaurant on the promenade, and he plays the accordion. It's a stereotype, but it's so good. I don't care that it's a stereotype.
Yeah. I love that. He's one of my favorite Klingons.
Yeah. He just he's like some sort of strange Venetian shop owner or something, but just in Star Trek.
Honestly, Star Trek has been understandably gun-shy about going back to Klingons ever since the pushback from Discovery. I hope that lessens over time, because I would love to see more nuance added to Klingons. Even though they've done a lot of elaboration on Klingons, they still are mostly portrayed as, like, we're just, like, bloodthirsty warriors. Which I feel like is fine, but it could work. That could be all it is, but it could be so much more interesting to show there being more aspects to their society.
Yeah, and I mean...
You like Babylon 5, don't you?
I do like Babylon 5. Well, yeah.
So, what's the Lens species in that?
The Minbari.
The Minbarians. So, imagine if there was Babylon 5, and then the Minbars, you only ever saw the warrior class.
Yeah.
You would accept it. You wouldn't ever think to yourself, well, there must be a priest class and a worker class. You'd be like, all right, these are the military aliens, you know?
Right.
But I feel like Klingon society showing, like, a priest class and a worker class could be an interesting exploration for Star Trek.
And I mean,
it's over.
Star Trek has even hinted at that. We see Klingon doctors.
Yes.
We see Klingon, like, there's a genetic scientist that Phlox meets.
Yeah.
And Phlox is like, I didn't know that there were any doctors like you. And he's like, well, no one talks about us, but we exist.
Of course. I mean, they have to exist,
right?
You know?
I mean, yeah, like, you can't have a 100% warrior society. It takes, like, 100 non-warriors to support every warrior, historically. You need about, like, 100 to 1. So there's tons of non-Klingon warriors. Yeah. I like when we have races and they don't have to be a stereotype, because that's one of the unfortunate biggest problems. Like when other series copy Star Trek, copying the fact that every species is just going to be a stereotyped rubber face alien is a bad thing to copy. We don't want that, but we still get that a lot
that's
of the time.
Good. Yeah. Monoculture, when you're doing alien species, it's just like, it feels kind of lazy, you know?
Yeah.
I get it, because it can be difficult to have a show where you want to introduce, like, two or three other alien species, but then also say, here's four different variations of each of them. Like, I can see that spiraling. So I do agree that it is a delicate balance that has to, you know, exist to get to that point. So I like it when Star Trek gets to that point.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be hard. Sometimes, like, a Mass Effect has a huge number of characters you meet, and something like that, it would be totally fine to put more variety into, like, you meet 50 Turians over the course of the trilogy, mix it up a bit.
Yes. Yep. Agreed.
So, I guess this is the part where we beam to the next episode?
Oh, did we do alternate titles?
Oh, do you have an alternate title?
I do, that's the only reason I'm bringing up this.
Okay.
My alternate title for this episode is "It Isn't Easy Being Green Blooded."
It isn't. That's a good one. Short notice answer. My alternate title would be "Where No Spock Has Gone Before."
Yes. Yes. Love it.
Yeah.
But now we're beaming. We're beaming to the future.
We're beaming. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Next episode is titled Lost in Translation, and
so we're beaming to a Bill Murray movie.
Apparently. I don't know, why would you pick that for you? It's like you're calling your title Jurassic Park, you know?
If there's a Star Trek episode named Jurassic Park, I promise you that's a one.
Yeah.
There's no way that episode gets a zero.
There's no way that episode gets a zero. So the description of Lost in Translation is, Uhura seems to be the only one who can hear a strange sound. When the noise triggers terrifying hallucinations, she enlists an unlikely assistant to help her track down the source. That unlikely assistant has to be Engineer Lady, the immortal Engineer Lady. It couldn't be anyone else, right? Like, who else would be the unlikely assistant?
No, that's great. I was just thinking to myself, for whatever reason, I was like, a dog? That's all I can picture.
Well, like
what dog exists on Star Trek besides Porthos? It would have to be a talking dog. So I was spiraling in my own mind of trying to think of something and then chastising my thoughts. And then you come in with the beautiful answer, which I hope is the correct answer.
The only person other than Engineer Lady that, like, would be an unlikely assistant would be this. So the transporter officer changed between seasons 1 and 2. And one of the bridge, like, navigators, the bridge navigator who works with Ortegas changed between seasons one and two or something like that. We basically don't know anyone else on the ship except for there was an ensign in a short trek who, like, they did this weird psyop training on her as part of her training to get on the Enterprise. They, like, pretended to arrest Pike. Yeah.
Spock's, Pike's not really a monster. You know, we're just checking to see whether you... Or it's like a Nazi.
Yeah, so it could be her, but I don't think it's her.
No, because that's the thing, is like, that kind of speculation, I feel like, is overthinking what the writers do.
Right.
They tend to, most times, be super straightforward, and then the nods to things like that tend to be just, like, Easter egg-y versus, like, plot-driven. I think Pellia is the call here.
It's gotta be
Pellia. If it's not Pellia, if it's not her, then... the, like, unusual, what does it say? Help from an unusual source.
Yeah.
And it's going to be something new for the episode, like, you know, a sentient version of the spaceship, or one of her hallucinations that is different from the nightmares, but is helpful and is talking to her. It is, like, a hallucination from someone from her past, but, you know what I mean? Like, something original. Something from this episode itself.
What if it's Scotty is there, but he's not the chief engineer yet, and that's what makes it unlikely?
Oh, and it's just audio, just Scotty over, like, you know.
Yeah, well, because there was that thing in the episode where he, like, had his hand, and they just, like, did a voiceover.
I do love the little nods to the other future, you know, of TOS. I think that's fun.
Right. You can definitely go too hard with the references, but I think they've pretty much kept it at the right level.
I think they're threading the needle very, very nicely on this season of the show.
This and Lower Decks are both, I'm very impressed with both these shows.
Yeah, I really love Lower Decks. I'm happy with all of New Trek so far. I do really enjoy Discovery.
You know, there's a lot of there's parts of Discovery that I do like. I don't want to be completely down on Discovery. It's just...
Oh, sure. No, yeah. I get it. Like, Discovery is a flawed show. But to me, I also think that, like, Deep Space Nine is a flawed show. I think that TNG is a flawed show.
Yeah.
I think Discovery is a flawed show. I think Strange New Worlds is, like... really good with, like, maybe a clunker or two, but there's nothing structurally wrong with the show to me. You know, it's just, it's so well done. And Lower Decks is, like, nearly a perfect show, but it's also a fucking cartoon comedy. You know, there's so much more leeway for them to do what they do.
Yeah.
That to me is the difference. Is I think in parallel with me saying, like, oh, I really like Discovery, is that maybe I think more harshly about the older shows than I let on.
Yeah. I mean, I did... I watched a Deep Space Nine Season 1 episode with a friend last night, and I'm like, do you want a serious one or a silly one? He's like, give me, like, one of the more silly ones. And so I picked If Wishes Were Horses, and I'm like, you know, this episode's not that great.
Is Season 1? Is that the problem? Why you didn't do that?
Well, Season 1 is what I had... sitting at hand.
I don't remember. Alan Rain's not in Season 1.
That is Move Along Home. Move Along Home is in Season 1. I figured, no, this is like...
I want to traumatize them.
I don't want to pick the absolute... I don't know.
Tyler, take your headphones off. These are spoiler titles.
Yeah. Don't... I mean... Honestly, I don't think the random list has If Wishes Are Horses. You Move Along Home.
Move Along Home. Wishes Are Horses. Tyler, Move Along Home. Wishes Are Horses. You ever need to pick episodes? Move Along Home. Wishes Are Horses.
Yeah. Pick those. Oh, my gosh. Pick
the batshit insane Deep Space Nine episodes that people that worship at the altar of Deep Space Nine just cringe at thinking of their existence.
You know, and what I like about Star Trek and Star Trek fans... is that we can, like, we do know particular episode titles. A lot of episodes, not every episode, but a lot of episodes are so distinctive that you can remember the title that goes with it. Maybe not the first time. Maybe you've seen them two or three times. But you can just talk about episodes by title for shows that you haven't seen in years, and everyone knows what you're talking about.
Hey, I can do the same thing with Mandalorian, episode 4, episode 7.
Exactly. Yeah, Mandalorian season 3 episode 2. That was a real banger.
I believe canonically it's called episode 11.
Yeah, yeah, it's actually episode 11 of season 2 because of the number.
They don't reset the numbers like, you know, your basic ass shows.
Yeah.
I don't remember fuck all of titles of any of other series in a way that I do with Star Trek.
There are some Babylon 5 episodes where you can remember the titles that are going with the events and stuff. But
yeah. I haven't watched Babylon. I've seen Babylon 5 maybe 2 or 3 times. I haven't watched it enough for the titles to see.
And they have kind of like, they all have a similar vibe because they're like it's like 80% written by John Michael Straczynski. Yeah. So he like has a style.
For good or for ill.
Yeah, he like has a style of how he makes titles. So you hear.
Sure does.
Well, yeah, it's like, which episode is the one, Signs and Portents or The Coming of Shadows? I can't remember which of the... I mean, I remember they're important. They're both important, but I don't remember which is which because they're just a Babylon 5 title.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, boy. You can easily derail me into a side talk about Babylon 5 because it's such a fascinating show.
Well, Eric said that he might check it out sometime, so eventually we might be talking about that.
Yeah, he's going to need a shepherd. That is a tough show to wander into blindly alone.
Yes, it is a tough show. I heard just today that they're coming out with Blu-ray sets soon.
Oh,
nice. A new Blu-ray release, so there's that.
Aren't there, like, new animated movies?
Yeah, there's a new upcoming animated movie set, I don't know, it's during season 5 at some point. It's John goes on a side adventure.
I'm prepared for it to be thoroughly mediocre, but I'm going to fucking watch it and I'm probably going to love it.
Yeah. Yep. You gotta pretend it's going to be terrible, and then when it turns out great, you can be impressed.
It gives me the feelings that I had watching The Honor Among Thieves, where I was like, there's no way this movie is going to be anything other than like me apologize, an apologizer for a D&D movie just because it's fun to see D&D. Then watching it and being like, oh, fuck, this is a great movie.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
That's the feeling that I want to capture. I don't think I will with the Babylon 5, but, you know, hope springs eternal.
You know, and there's a million other sci-fi shows, too, so we'll never run out of sci-fi content to podcast about. We just won't.
Never!
They make it faster than we can podcast about it, so it'll always be there.
Thank you for always being there, sci-fi shows.
Do you have anything else to say before I hit stop recording?
No, I think we're done. We probably cut all that other stuff out after we beamed away.
All right. Bye, everyone. Join us again next week.